back with you on The Fan. It's Daryl Ryder, Danny Cunningham in for the boys. Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima. They will be back with you next week. Of course, Browns training camp kicking off today out in Berea. Fans, first practice will be on Friday at 2 p.m. But let's not forget about the Cleveland Guardians. They have flipped the script on all of us from going straight down the elevator shaft via a 10-game losing streak in which, while collecting three hits in a game, let alone hoping they could score three runs in a game, was a thing. Now they're back to scoring runs. They're pitching well. They're beating up on the teams that they're supposed to be beating up on. They're back to 500, having won 10 of 12. And how much does that change their thought process heading to the trade deadline? Let's welcome in the fantastic, outstanding writer for The Athletic, who covers the Cleveland Guardians in Major League Baseball. He is Zach Meisel. Zach, good morning. I know you're fired up, most importantly, for Browns training camp today.
I am, Daryl. We got four quarterbacks to talk about. I mean, we've never had this much content.
We did our quarterback rankings earlier in the show.
Give us yours, Zach.
So let's go ahead and throw you just right into the fire, right out of the gate. Why don't you go ahead and rank these four arms?
All right. So one, Connor Shaw. Two, Bruce Gretkowski. Three, Spurgeon Wynn. And four, Thad Lewitt.
Yes!
See, I thought Thad would have been three at least.
I mean, I was kind of hoping for the guys that are actually still on the team, but I'll take that. That's a pretty good ranking.
I like to live in Zach's world. I think that's more fun.
Hey, Zach, times are good now for the Guardians. Stephen Vogt talked after the game about just, you know, how much he loves where this ball club is at. They've got 62 games left, 50 up, 50 down. Ironically, 24-24 at home. And they're 26-26 on the road. How much has them being able to turn this thing back around, do you think, changed their thought process, their approach when it comes to adding or subtracting to this ball club by the trade deadline?
Yeah, you know, this is what Major League Baseball wants. This is why, you know, they have three wild cards in each league now. So the Guardians, who are sitting at 500, they're only 2.5 games back of a wild card spot. And look, there are a bunch of other teams kind of in that purgatory, in that middle ground in the American League. And so what it does is it just jams up the trade deadline, right? Like, we're 8 days away, but it would not surprise me at all if 99% of the activity took place within the final 24 hours or so of the deadline. And so I think that's where the Guardians are too, where, you know, that it's funny because the team said the week before the All-Star break, when they went to Houston and swept the Astros, they took 3 of 4 in Chicago. They said, look, we want this to be the week that we look back on and say, that's when we turned our season around. And the front office was sitting there saying, well, that's going to need to be the case. You know, they've definitely got an easier schedule here coming out of the break and even in August. And so they were hopeful that they'd play better and that would help make the decisions for them. And that has happened so far. So, you know, a lot of teams have been calling about Stephen Kwan and Emmanuel Clase and Cade Smith. And they've been calling since, and especially when the Guardians were losing 10 in a row, they're all thinking, oh my God, all these guys could be on the table. And I think the Guardians were quick to say, well, not so fast. You know, we need to see some more. And I think this is why.
Zach, how should the record that the Guardians have against teams that are above 500 versus the record they have against teams below 500 influence the way we look at who this team actually is as they sit at exactly 500?
Yeah, I mean, it's still important. Like, give them credit. They've played really well lately. The starting pitching's been so consistent that the offense has been better. You're seeing some nice, you know, you're finally seeing, like, Angel Martinez looks like someone that could help you now and in the future. Kyle Manzardo looks like someone who can help you now and in the future. Brian Rocchio has been really good lately. Those are all good things. The lineup is still not good enough. The rotation has questions. You know, maybe Shane Bieber can help answer those. The bullpen, like, half of it is really good and half of it is a mess, right? Like, this team still is, you know, they've had to fight and scrap and claw to get back just to 500. So I think you have to have a sense of reality here. Like, you know, this team is Would you pick them in a series against some other teams? Like, maybe not. But the front office is always thinking about the future, and sometimes even, you know, at the expense of the present. And so they're going to operate thinking just as much about 2026 as they are 2025. So, you know, I think that that makes it so that a lot is still on the table. We've seen them, like, they were in the same exact position 2 years ago, right? And they were thinking more about the future than the present that year. So I think everything's still on the table, and they're going to take this down to the last minute.
Zach Meisel, the outstanding Guardians and Major League Baseball writer for The Athletic, joining us on the Fan Hotline. Zach, outside of Stephen Kwan, Jose Ramirez, over under number of guys that are going to finish the season with a batting average above 230.
I think Martinez will. And thanks for having me, guys. That's all I got.
I mean, you know, to your point, you know, this lineup has so many deficiencies from an offensive standpoint, Zach. You know, and you mentioned about how this front office, you know, tries to thread the needle between having one eye on today, but also having an eye on tomorrow. Do you see a situation where something could fall into place for them in the next couple of weeks where they can pull off a trade that might hurt them short term, but could set them up long term to fix a lot of these lineup deficiencies that they have?
Yeah, I mean, so Class A is the one. You know, that's the one, if you look at, like, I know the Mets would love to get their hands on a Cleveland reliever. I know the Phillies would love to get their hands on a Cleveland reliever. And there are a lot of other teams, too. So, it's not impossible. I really think, and, like, this changes day to day, but, like, I do think the way things are trending, like, it could be a quiet deadline for Cleveland. You know, I think they're, you could talk me into a Carlos Santana trade just so you can open up first base for CJ Kapis, open up at bats for Chase DeLauder if he ever gets healthy. But, like, you know, are you going to trade Stephen Kwan right now? I don't think so. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. I think they're really hesitant to even move Class A at this point just because they've gotten themselves into a position where I think they kind of just want to see what might happen for the last 2 months. And Class A has 3.5 years of team control, so it's not like these offers wouldn't exist over the winter, too. So Right. That's sort of what they're weighing, you know, how much is going to change between now and December with some of their trade pieces. The problem with, like, they don't have any really attractive rentals, right? Like, they don't, like,
yeah,
they're not going to get anything for Carlos Santana or Lane Thomas or Paul Sewald, right? So they're kind of just stuck in the middle. It's like the only, you know, they certainly could trade prospects for help, but I also don't think that they feel like they're, you know, one rental bat away from winning the World Series here. So, you know, this is the problem. Like, it's great that they've gotten back to 500 and they've played better, but they dug themselves such a big hole. And more than anything, it was the off season that they had. Like, they came into this season, but we've watched this same lineup night after night after night. And so now they're just kind of stuck with it.
So you said the thing that is most likely to happen, which is a quiet deadline for them. But if you were running the Guardians, what direction do you think you would go between buying, selling, or standing pat?
I would be doing everything with my mind looking toward 26. I think there are pieces in place to be a legit contender next year. Now, part of this is, like, I need to see CJ Kapis over the last 2 months. I need him to get his feet wet now so that next year you're not, like, coddling him, right? Like, think about Kyle Manzardo last season. He came up in May for a month. It was rough. He went back down, came back up late in the season, and in the playoffs he was hitting second. And so can you – you need to see what you have with Kapis. We'll probably learn – Chase DeLauder status today. If by some miracle he's healthy, same thing. Like, you got to see the kid. And, you know, other than that, there's just not a lot you can do. Like, Juan Brito has kind of been a lost season. You know, I'd love to see Travis Bazzana get up to AAA by the end of the year so that he can be in the conversation early next season. But I think you got to build around your two key pieces in the lineup. I think you need to build around the rotation, and I think you need to have a much different winter than you had last time.
You brought him up, so I want to ask about him now, but why have they been so hesitant to call up the kids in Chase DeLauter, who obviously now is dealing with yet another health issue, despite the fact that all of his healthy time has been spent in AAA as opposed to the major leagues, in CJ Cephas? Like, what is it about this front office that is so hesitant to bring up guys that very clearly, to the outsider like me, Zach, look as if they're ready to be in the big leagues?
Yeah, they're just stubborn, maybe is the word. I don't know. They set a plan and they stick to it. And the plan was to build up Chase DeLauter until he was playing, I think it was like five times a week, but 4 to 5 days in a row. And they preferred to do it in the minor leagues because, you know, if he didn't bounce back a certain day and he was sore, they could just sit him and it wouldn't screw up, you know, the major league plans for everybody else, right? Now, I'm saying that, and this is their plan, and they were going to stick to it until he completed the plan and then call him up. I'm with you. Just get the kid up to the major leagues, and if he gets hurt at the major leagues, he gets hurt at the major leagues, but at least you saw him and he can help you. And that's the issue I've had with this season, is that you came into this season already with a deficient lineup, and you've done nothing to fix it until this point. And that's why I'm just, you know, like, the offense has been better for the last 2 weeks, but it was so bad for like 3+ months that it's going to fall somewhere in between there. So I don't expect them to keep scoring 6, 7, 8 runs a night here. And now with DeLauter, a question, you know, you don't have a lot of, it's Cephas and that's like it at AAA who can help you and maybe give the offense a jolt right now. And so that's why they're just in this tough spot, because I just think their ceiling is a little low for the rest of this season.
Zach, saw your post that hit The Athletic this morning, your tribute to Hall of Fame broadcaster Tom Hamilton, who is going to receive the Ford Frick Award in Cooperstown. You know, I'm not just saying this because you're on with us right now. I think you are one of the premier writers when it comes to painting a picture and how you opened your story, just beautifully fantastic. But take us through that story and what Tom Hamilton has meant to you personally and professionally as he gets inducted into baseball's hallowed hall.
Yeah, I mean, Darryl, you know this. Like, he is the most humble guy, and it's honestly difficult to write about him. And so I decided months ago, you know, I was not going to bother him at all. Like, I'd rather talk to other people about him. And so, you know, you talk to Hall of Fame broadcasters who have won the same award, and you listen to them talk about Tom Hamilton, and you start to realize, like, sometimes we get caught in our own bubble here in Cleveland, and look, we've been blessed, right? Like, we've had some of the absolute greatest calling our sports games here for long periods of time. Like, it's incredible, honestly. And Hammy is one of those. And it's incredible to realize that he's got that reputation among the best of the best outside of Cleveland. Like, it's hard for a baseball play-by-play person in another city to really grasp how good Tom Hamilton is at the job. Yeah. And yet, so many of them, like, whether it's on their way home from their own games, whether it's in retirement, whether it's just looking on social media to find his home run calls, like, they're all aware. They all go out of their way to listen to that man. And so, you know, he's had a tough couple weeks here preparing his speech and losing sleep over it and being overwhelmed with whether it's interview requests or just people saying kind things about him. You know, it's going to be interesting Saturday when he's up there in Cooperstown giving a speech. And it's just crazy to think the guy who's been narrating everybody else's stories for so long and doing such an expert job at it has to relay his own story. And it's been something he's always uncomfortable with. So the best way I can put it is, whether you know him and you've talked to him and you've gotten sucked into those compelling conversations with him that you think are going to last 2 minutes and it turns into 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Or you just listen to him through your radio. Like, you feel like he's talking directly to you and he cares about you and that he's your best friend. And so we're blessed to have him here. And it's, you know, I don't know how long he's going to do it, but like, it would be so weird to imagine anybody else in that chair.
When you think of Tom Hamilton, what call do you think of?
That's a good question. So I will say I in the story today, we embedded what I think are like the cream of the crop and what players and coaches I talked to, what they said was their favorite calls. Everyone says the Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez fight. That was the most popular answer. And of course, he says that his call was only good because he was lucky. He had the perfect angle from his booth. It's like, the guy, come on, give yourself some credit. But I think, I don't know, maybe the Rajay Davis one, just because that was such an unexpected home run. And the way he let it breathe, like if you go back and listen, like, that's a hard one. It's not your typical like swing in a driveway back, like no doubt home run. Like that thing snuck over the wall in left field. And then you're sitting there. Like I remember me being frozen, trying to figure out, oh my God, like what am I going to write? What's going to happen? What did that just happen? And for him to nail that call on the radio where you're not trying to be overbearing and dominate the moment and like listen to the atmosphere in that moment. Like, I just thought he nailed that. That one for sure stands out.
Mine, I'll give you mine, Zach. 1995, when they clinched the division, the season of dreams is a reality. Cleveland, you will have an October to remember. That one is one that I will remember for the rest of my life. He's our version of Ernie Harwell, Bob Uecker, Jack Buck, among the greats of the great. Zach, I love the piece that you wrote this morning. I thought it was a perfect tribute, and you're absolutely right. Tom is so humble. You walk by him in the press box, and a quick hello turns into 45 minutes later, you both realize you had to be somewhere else.
Exactly.
Zach, yeah, appreciate the time as always. You're the best, my friend.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thank you. He is Zach Meisel, who writes for The Athletic, covers the Guardians, covers Major League Baseball. I encourage all of you to pop on the Athletic's website and read his Tom Hamilton piece. It might bring a tear or two to your eye.